Good morning. It's great to be together this morning. Great to get to worship the God of the Bible, the God of the universe, a living God together. If you would, open to the book of Mark. The book of Mark. We'll be in the book of Mark almost entirely this morning. And truthfully, one of my goals is that as you consider what you're going to read this week when you go through your coming week and what you're going to study, maybe you'll pick the book of Mark because we talk about it here for 30 minutes. The average person hears an estimated 20,000 to 30,000 words a day in a 24-hour period. That's a ton of words to think through. And truthfully, I don't think we really hear a lot of those words that are being spoken to us. You know, there are certain moments, though, in your life and in my life when people speak and those who are listening really listen to what they're saying. They tune in, they hang on their every word. Maybe it's at the climax of an important event or a key moment in your life. I can think of a movie in which the villain is established early on. You know exactly who the villain is. And he's a ruler, and under his leadership, the land goes to waste. It goes to ruin. And all along, the hero really isn't much of a hero at all in this movie. But over the course of his lifetime, some 90 minutes if you're watching the movie, the hero gains strength and wisdom and confidence until you come to this key moment when the hero and the villain are battling it out. And there's fire, intense battling all around, till finally, the villain is about to speak the key phrase in the whole movie, and you're hanging on every word. And even though he speaks it in a whisper, it's like he's shouting it at you because you're listening so intently at that moment. Maybe you can think of somebody that you know or did know that when they speak, you really listen to them. Maybe a mother or a father, maybe your grandfather or an uncle, maybe your girlfriend or your spouse, though I admit I need to work on that with Mel. But when they spoke, what made you listen to them? What made you tune in? Maybe they didn't speak very often at all. And so when they did speak, it was almost like their words needed to be heard. You know, that's what they said about President Lincoln. He was very slow to speak, but whenever he spoke, people listened because it was almost like anything he shared needed to be heard. Maybe you listen intently because the person speaking has some kind of power, or at least you think they do. Maybe like a doctor giving you some advice, or a boss, or even a politician to some people. Maybe you listen when they speak just because you love them. Avery, when she was 3, told the same story over and over and over, and every time I listened like it was the first time because I love her. Well, since the beginning of time, God has spoken to humanity in a variety of ways, from what I can tell. There were times he spoke directly to somebody. You think about the Lord speaking directly to Abraham, man to man. There were times that he would speak to people through other people, like the prophets, or even like us as his image bearers today. There were times God speaks through writing. You think about the Ten Commandments, or the writing on the wall in the book of David or Daniel. Or you think about his word, which we're looking at today. There are also times he speaks through really big actions instead of words. You think of the parting of the Red Sea, or Elisha and the prophets of Baal and what he did there. I think it's interesting that in the book of Mark, in Mark's gospel, Mark records 2 times when God speaks from heaven, from above. I think that's a bit unique, especially for the New Testament, and so we should give extra weight to what God said in those moments. I don't know who exactly was in attendance those 2 times. I don't know who exactly heard, but I know Mark wants to share them with us. And so this morning, I want us to hear them and think through them. Read the first one with me in Mark 1, 9 through 11. It was already read, but we'll read it again. Mark 1, 9 through 11. It says, "In those days, Jesus came from Nazareth of Galilee and was baptized by John in the Jordan. And when he came up out of the water, immediately he saw the heavens being torn open and the Spirit descending on him like a dove. A voice came from heaven, 'You are my beloved Son. With you I am well pleased.'" A couple quick things that we might notice about this powerful moment. You know, whatever the voice of God would have sounded like in that moment, he says that Jesus, this man from little Nazareth of Galilee, is his very son, the promised king, the promised Messiah. He's here in flesh on this earth that he himself created. The word there for voice, where it says, and a voice came from heaven, is phone, which sounds a lot like our word, phone. We use phones to connect with each other, right? And the idea here is that God is connecting from above directly with his son as well as humanity. It says the heavens were torn open. There are a couple typical words for opening, and this is the one of those two that is far more aggressive than the other. It's violent even, like ripping open a package or kicking down a door. One writer said, at least in his opinion, this moment would have been like heaven breaking apart so that God could exclaim that Jesus is his son. And not just that he's his son, but that he is a son that he is well pleased with. You think back to Adam, God's first created son, or the Israelites, who are called his firstborn son in Exodus 22. Both of those sons sin. They turn their back on God. But here is Jesus, God's son, who has served him perfectly, and he is well pleased with him. Less than a year later, in Mark 9:7, God speaks again. In Mark 9:7, it says, and a cloud overshadowed them, and a voice came out of the cloud and said, this is my beloved son, listen to him. Another powerful moment. As Jesus is transfigured, he's changed and his power is shown. And from above, the voice of God again says, this is my son, listen to him. The word for cloud there is the same word and same idea as the cloud that led the Israelites in the wilderness. And when it says the cloud overshadowed them, I think the picture is that the clouds in that moment formed on top of them. And so I think the clouds coming together would have made for a striking scene leading up to the voice of God himself coming out of those clouds. And then, for a second time, you have God calling Jesus his beloved or dear son. And then God says that Jesus is the one that we need to listen to. You know, there's a lot of different people that you can listen to, that you can follow. There's a lot of opportunity to listen to various forms of truth. But God says that Jesus is the one that we need to listen to. I think all four gospel writers show Jesus to us in different ways, very intentionally. John shows Jesus as the divine Son of God. Matthew shows us Jesus as the King. Luke shows Jesus as the Son of Man. But in the book of Mark, Mark presents us with testimony, with words, and with events that show us, I think, a few things. One, they show us who God wants us to believe Jesus to be. Two, they show us who nature wants us to believe Jesus to be. And three, they show who people Jesus came into contact with while on this earth are really almost forced to believe Jesus to be. Mark starts off by calling his gospel the gospel of Christ, the Son of God, and he ends it in a very similar way. I feel like Mark's gospel can be divided into two sections based on those declarations that we read from God from heaven. In chapters 1 through 8, you have Mark showing God's statement to be true, that Jesus is indeed the Son of God. You have all of these things testifying in chapters 1 through 8 to that very fact. And then the rest of the book of Mark, from what I can tell, includes the teachings of Jesus, different things that God is telling people they need to listen to. I want to talk briefly about some of the things that Mark describes to prove to us that Jesus is the Son of God. And then I want to consider some of the things that Jesus says that we're being told to listen to. But just for one moment, put Mark to the side. And imagine you were there when Jesus was baptized, and you heard God speak from above, and you heard the things that he said about who his son was. What do you think would make you think you should listen to what God said and believe it, just at face value? I can think of three reasons why you might listen at face value. Number one, you might listen because God's words, they're true. You can trust what he says. Maybe you think back to different times, really throughout the history of the world, in which God had proven trustworthy. In 2 Samuel 2, God talks about his servant David, how he made David a leader, though he was just a shepherd, how he made David's name great and cut off his enemies from him. And so David responds to God by saying of God, God, your words are true. Or maybe you think back to Jacob. God had made promises to Jacob and to Jacob's family to bless them and to be their identity. But then, like we do, Jacob made a mess of things over and over again. And all throughout, as Jacob deals with God, he calls God the God of his father, the God of Isaac, if you will. It's almost like God is not Jacob's God. But even so, God sticks with Jacob and sticks with his words that he gave to Jacob until Jacob is old. And Jacob, when he is old, speaks to his sons and says, the God of your father, now his God, will help you, will bless you. I think after seeing God keep his word for his whole life, Jacob finally declares that God is his God. Over and over throughout history, God's words have proven true and trustworthy to his people. Maybe you would listen because God's words, they're powerful. Over and over, we've said in the book of Genesis that God uses his words to create. I think some 11 times in Genesis 1, God speaks and something changes, something transforms. Or maybe you would think about all of the prophecies, all of the times God gave his word foretelling future events, some 2,000 or more fulfilled prophecies in this book. Even little things, I say little things, but little things like Jeremiah predicting that the land of Eden, which was once fertile, would become a wasteland. It is a wasteland now, and the chance of that being fulfilled, some mathematician said, is 1 in 10 to the 5th power. I don't know what number that is, but I know it's a little chance, and that's one of thousands of prophecies that were fulfilled. God's words are powerful. Or finally, maybe you would listen because you believe that God's words are life-changing. They can change your life for the better. That's what they did for Noah. Noah lived in a terrible world, right, at a terrible time. Everyone around him was wicked. They were godless. But Noah was blameless. He was an acceptable offering. God sees Noah and gives Noah instructions on how he wants to rescue him out of that world before he cleanses it of all of that impurity. And so Noah starts building a boat and lets God's word change the course of his life for the better. Just the fact that God said that Jesus was his son, as Mark recorded, should have been enough to convince everyone, including us, that that is true. But what else does Mark show us to prove that God's words about who Jesus is are true? In chapters 1 through 8, Mark shows Jesus' power, his love, and he gives us testimonies to prove that Jesus is the Son of God. Look with me in Mark chapter 1. First, I want you to look at the testimony of the spirit world. The testimony of the spirit world. In Mark 1:24, there's a man in the synagogue who has an unclean spirit. And Jesus approaches him, and actually the spirit himself speaks. In verse 24, the Spirit says, "What have you to do with us, Jesus of Nazareth? Have you come to destroy us? I know who you are, the Holy One of God." Later on in Mark chapter 5, verse 7, there's this man that's living among the tombs with unclean spirits. And the man approaches Jesus. And in verse 7, it's the spirits that speak, and they say, "What have you to do with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God?" Back in Mark 3, verse 11, Mark says that unclean spirits in general are just testifying to who Jesus is. Mark 3:11 says, "Whenever the unclean spirits saw him, they fell down before him and cried out, 'You are the Son of God.'" It's not just the spirits, though. Mark shows that Jesus has power that testifies to him being the Son of God. You know, if you're serving Jesus, you've seen that power work in you day by day, and you could testify about that change in your life. But, you know, I wish the recipients of that power in Mark's time could come through that door back there and tell us about what he did for them. I wish we could hear from the leper in Mark 1:40. You know, we might have heard, how he came to Jesus and begged him to make him clean. Maybe he'd describe leprosy to us. I'm not very familiar with leprosy. Maybe he'd describe how his body was numb and how it was deteriorated, how his hands and feet might have twisted and curled so painfully, becoming more and more deformed day by day. And then I think we'd hear how Jesus, demonstrating his immense power, touched him. And when Jesus touched him, it wasn't Jesus that became unclean. Instead, the man became clean immediately. We'd not only hear it, but if he came through the door, we'd see it. We'd see his arms and his legs and see his body pure and clean. I wish we could hear from the paralyzed man in Mark 2 about how his friends busted through the roof to get him to Jesus. And you can imagine how that man's muscles would have deteriorated year after year as he laid in his bed and couldn't move. And then we'd hear what Jesus said in Mark 2:11. Mark 2:11. When he says, "Rise, pick up your bed and go home." And he rose and immediately picked up his bed and went out before them all, so that they were all amazed and glorified God. I bet he'd talk about how in an instant strength filled his body, how immediately he could get up. It wasn't therapy over months and months. No, he was in an instant transformed by Jesus. And the witness's response there, Mark says, is to glorify God, God himself, because they make some connection between Jesus and God because of the power that they witnessed. It'd be great to hear from the disciples in Mark 4, where they're on a boat and this terrible storm arises. The Sea of Galilee, apparently, according to Google, sits down in a bowl. And so there's all these immense storms, violent storms there. And there was one that day. They tell us how Jesus was sleeping, and they feverishly go to wake him up. And when they did, he just started speaking to the wind and the waves. In fact, Mark says, "And he rebuked the wind and said to the sea, 'Peace, be still.' And the wind ceased, and there was a great calm." They might tell us how the waves immediately calmed. It wasn't that Jesus pushed away the storm and the waves kind of slowly subsided. No, there was immediate calm. I think they would tell us they saw Jesus control one of the most uncontrollable things that nature has to offer. They might even mention their response, which Mark says was great fear, great fear. They say, "Who is this that even the wind and the sea obey him?" I think even that is a sort of testimony that Jesus is God. Because as you think about all of history, who else could it be? Who has controlled nature in the past? Only God himself. Well, then in Mark 4:38, prior to Jesus calming that storm, the disciples say, "Teacher, do you not care that we're perishing? Do you not care that we're dying on this boat?" Of course, they weren't, because Jesus was on their boat. But that leads into Mark 5, when Mark tells us about three people who are actually perishing, who are dying. And then he shows Jesus' power to save them. Look in Mark 5:15, where he tells us about this demon-possessed man. I wonder what the demon-possessed man would tell us about if he could talk to us now. You know, what his testimony about Jesus would be. Maybe he'd talk about the fact that he was such an outcast. He was isolated and lonely every single day of his life. Maybe he'd talk about how he lost control of himself completely. He couldn't control himself at all. Maybe he'd talk about the pain and the agony he was feeling as he couldn't stop harming himself every day, day in and day out, and just how hopeless he would have felt. But then he'd tell us how one interaction with Jesus changed everything. Because in Mark 5:15, Mark says that this man was sitting there, actually sitting there under control, clothed and in his right mind. He'd talk about how Jesus gave him his life back. I wish we could hear from the woman of Mark 5, who might share the desperation she felt, slowly bleeding to death year after year. She'd talk about how she tried doctor after doctor, and it didn't matter. She couldn't find anyone. But then we'd hear about the moment from verse 27, when she touches Jesus, and in Jesus she finds the one healer who can make her well. Her life, I think she would say, would have been consumed by trying to find a cure by trying to find life. And then, in an instant, because of Jesus, the search is over and life is found in him. Then finally, there's the 12-year-old girl in Mark 5, whose father had tried to bring Jesus to her to save her, but she dies. I wish we could hear from the father, who was there when Jesus said, "Little girl, I say to you, arise." And immediately the girl got up and began walking. I think we'd hear first about his deep despair over losing his precious child, but how that despair immediately would have turned into great joy. He'd tell us how he saw that for Jesus, death is no more than sleeping. You know, to us, raising someone from the dead is an astounding miracle. But to Jesus, who is the Son of God, it's just as if he's waking someone up who'd been sleeping. Actions like that, they're just normal to the Son of God because of that power. Finally, in chapter 6, there are thousands of people, Mark says, are miraculously fed by Jesus. I think this is the only miracle mentioned by all of the gospel writers. And I think they do that because it shows us clearly who Jesus must be. Only the Son of God can feed people like God had, both physically and spiritually. It was God that fed his people bread from heaven as they wandered through the wilderness. And then as God led them into the promised land years before this, Joshua said he was still feeding the people. He said they were eating fruit of vineyards and orchards they didn't plant. God had fed his people in the past. And Mark shows Jesus, the Son of God, feeding people here as well. I think it's interesting because you see miracle after miracle. And people, they don't really deny that he's done them. They don't deny his power, but they just choose not to accept who his power proves him to be. Mark shows that the spirit world testifies that Jesus is the Son of God, and then he lines up all of these other witnesses to prove Jesus' great power. But he also shows that Mark has love, or that Jesus has love that proves he is the Son of God. It's interesting to me, in the book of Matthew, the purpose statement of Jesus is right up front in Matthew's gospel, in chapter 1:21. Matthew says that Jesus will save his people from their sins. But Mark seems to wait later. In chapter 10, verse 45 of the book of Mark, Mark says, "For even the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many." Jesus' purpose demonstrates his love for humanity. And I wonder if Mark waited so long in his book to show that statement, because prior to stating it, all he shows is Jesus living out that purpose, showing that the only person who can love like God has loved is his Son. And really what we see God doing throughout all of human history is demonstrating his love by choosing a helpless people. People that seem to have no value at all, and then blessing them and saving them and bringing them peace and life and hope. And that's what Mark shows Jesus doing. Jesus comes to earth with that same very purpose, to rescue people like us, a helpless people. In Mark 2, Jesus goes to people who are outcasts, tax collectors, and sinners. And he brings healing and cleansing to people who have no peace. He gives life to people who have no life. Jesus' love testifies that he is the Son of God in that he loves like only God himself can love. The second time God spoke in Mark 9, he told humanity to listen to his Son. I've heard that every part of creation serves and listens to God except mankind, and that's true so often. I struggle to listen to God at times and to listen to Jesus. So many times I've listened to others' words, or really my own words, and I don't listen to the words of Jesus. Why do you think we do that? Why do you think we have that struggle? I can think of four things. Sometimes I know Jesus' words are true. I just let someone speak more loudly to me. You know, like Pilate, when he gave Jesus over to the mob, they were shouting, "Crucify him, crucify him." You know, Pilate knew Jesus was innocent, and yet he handed him over because the mob was louder. Other times I don't listen because I simply haven't paid enough attention to what Jesus said about something. I don't know what he said well enough, and so I put other things above his words. Other times, I have heard what he's saying. I just didn't like it, or I just had other things going on. And so I did what I wanted instead, much like the rich young ruler did. Sometimes I'm like that group of thousands of people who were fed by Jesus. I see his power. I believe in his power. But I just didn't care much about what it pointed to. And so like that crowd, I went away and did my own thing. Well, as you're looking in Mark 9 through 15, what are some of the things that Jesus says that we need to listen to? Just three quick things and a few questions, and then we'll wrap up. In Mark 9:35, Jesus says, "If anyone be first, he must be last of all and servant of all." And in Mark 12:31, he says, "You shall love your neighbor as yourself." How are you doing loving and serving other people? The Son of God came to serve. Are you serving those around you? Are you encouraging those who are older, who may not have an earthly family nearby? Are you serving those who are sick? Are you serving others by spending time praying to the God of the universe on their behalf? Are you serving others by talking to them about who Jesus is? I need to do better on these things. So many times, I think I find myself working so hard in certain areas of my life, but I don't work hard for Jesus. I don't work hard for God, and that's a shame. In Mark 12:30, Jesus says, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength." How are we doing with that? Are you like the rich young ruler in Mark 10, who lets things of this world get in the way of loving Jesus? I've been like that far too many times. Jesus came and he showed us that true love, real love, is sacrificial. He knew he'd have to die even before the beginning of time. You can imagine that dread, knowing he would leave the Father. And then he looks down and sees the people he's going to die for, sees us for who we are, and still comes. In return, are we making sacrifices to him that just cost us nothing? I think too many times I look back on my days and my weeks, even months, and I see that Jesus has gotten just a few minutes of my time out of my abundance. That's not sacrificial love. That's not true love. Finally, in Mark 13:31, Jesus says, "Heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will not pass away." I think Jesus is saying that his words are eternal. Am I living like Jesus' words are the ones that are lasting, are the ones that are important? I think there's a common theme among many of the people Mark shows Jesus heal. I think you see that they were desperately trying to get to Jesus. They saw their need and they saw Jesus as the one who could fulfill that need. I think sometimes we look elsewhere to be made well. We look inward as if we're the ones with the power to save ourselves somehow. We look to other people and their words and their thoughts as if they're the ones. But it's Jesus that is the Son of God. And it's his words that will not pass away. We've got to listen to him. In summary, I think Mark has tried to convey that Jesus is the Son of God by showing us who God wants us to believe Jesus to be, who nature wants us to believe Jesus to be, and who people that Jesus came into contact with want us to believe Jesus to be. Mark shows God speak from heaven twice, at big moments in the life of Jesus, telling us that Jesus is his son and that we should listen to him. But we know that humanity did not do that. They didn't listen to him. They didn't listen to demon after demon who have no doubt who Jesus is. They didn't listen to the little girl who was raised from the dead. They didn't listen to the leper who was made clean. They didn't listen to the paralyzed man who could walk. They didn't listen to nature, which Jesus controlled only as God himself could control. And all of that leads to the moment in time when Jesus, the Son of God, is strung up on a cross and murdered. And in that moment, unlike the other two moments in his life, in Jesus' life, God doesn't seem to speak from heaven. It does seem, though, like he speaks loudly with his actions, and he speaks through his son. In Mark 15, which is the last place we'll stop in the book of Mark, Mark 15, it talks about the moment when God's wonderful, awful plan of redemption culminates in a sacrifice unlike any other. And in those moments, Mark tells us about the testimony of one more person, a Roman soldier. I wonder if the soldier was part of the battalion, some probably 420 men, that would have stripped Jesus and mocked him and thrust that crown of thorns onto his head that we read about in Mark 15, 16. And as Jesus died hanging on the cross, the Roman soldier would have seen him, and he probably would have looked like a nobody to the soldier, just another criminal that he would watch die. But then the soldier would have heard him say things like, "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do." And as Jesus was dying, or did die, he would have seen God cover the land with darkness, even though it was the middle of the day. He would have felt God shake the earth, like Matthew's gospel tells us happened. He probably didn't know immediately, but he would have heard, and others would have known, that God tore the temple veil from top to bottom. And you know, the word for tear there is the same word used in Mark 1 when God tore the heavens open to declare that Jesus was his son. He did that same thing with the temple curtain from top to bottom. I think to show that because Jesus was his son and because of that sacrifice, we can reconnect with him, with God. And the soldier, seeing and hearing many of these things, says this in Mark 15:39. He says, "Truly, this man was the Son of God." It's almost like there's no other response he can give than that. It's just obvious. He's almost compelled to say it. There's going to come a point in time when Jesus will come back to this earth. And at that time, I believe we'll be in the exact same position as this Roman soldier. The events of Jesus' return, it'll force us to say that Jesus is the Son of God. The question is, before that moment, before he comes, will we choose to say it and proclaim it while we still have the time? Will we choose to serve him like he is the Son of God, like he is our Lord? Or will we wait until it's too late? Who do you think Jesus is? Do you believe that he is the Son of God? And if you do, are you living like he is the Son of God? Are you listening to his words?